You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning, I was joined by the former Palace and Charlton midfielder, Paul Mortimer. Morning, Morts.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm absolutely fine, thank you. Yourself?
How am I? Can't complain. You know what? I find it funny when people say, I can't complain. Well, why not? Why can't
Listen,
you complain?
I can moan with the best of them.
Well, that's what I mean.
But I'm just rather not today. There's nothing to moan about today.
Oh,
yet.
Please, mustn't grumble. That was the one. It's not British people. Hey, you all mustn't grumble.
No, it's not mustn't grumble. If I have something to grumble about, you know I'm going to grumble, but there's nothing I can think of at the moment.
Right. I mean, I used to say fine. Right.
Yeah.
I used to say, oh, you said fine. Obviously, fine stands for... Well, I can't say the word. Flipped up, insecure, neurotic and emotional, right? It's fine. But obviously, see, you can't go into all the stuff that's going on.
No, of course you can't.
You just go, yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Fine. But actually, no, I'm a bit shaken, to be honest. I watched the last episode of Chernobyl yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to give any spoiler alerts.
Yes, you are. You're
I'm not.
I've not watched it yet.
And I'm not going to give any spoiler alerts away. What I would say is it's up there with The Sopranos and The West Wing and
really?
Breaking Bad.
You're putting it up there?
It is as good as anything I've seen. It is an absolute masterpiece. It's a masterpiece. I watched it. I sort of felt like telling everyone I'm going in. Going in now because I've never seen anything like this. It upset me. It made me really, really angry. Oh. I mean, properly sort of, I don't know. The reason I sort of wanted to tell you because it was, there's one line in it which I will say to you. It's basically every lie we tell incurs a debt to the truth. Sooner or later, that debt must be paid. Right. He says this in a scene in the last episode, and it blew my mind. Mm. It absolutely blew my mind. I have never watched anything like this.
Mm.
I was at one point I couldn't sit down. I was watching it and I'm just sort of sat there and I was too fidgety and jumpy and I had to stand up and walk about to watch it. It's like watching a really tense football match. It's that sort of, I was so upset and annoyed. And gutted. It's the scale of it, Morse,
yeah.
Is what it is. It's the scale of it. It's not just about the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, although it is about that.
Yeah.
It's about the bigger picture.
Yeah.
The lies and all the rest of it. So I can only say to people that you have to watch it.
Yeah.
And I understand why you would go, oh, really? Chernobyl? Do we really want to watch
it?
I mean, look, I can tell you it's not a bag of laughs. All right, I can tell you, there's very little singing and dancing. The musical numbers are a bit downbeat, is all I would say about Chernobyl, right? But you have to watch it. It's glorious. Have you watched any of them?
No, I haven't. I've got them all on my iPad. I've got a bit of time today, actually, after the show. So I'm going to start. I'll watch the first episode.
And you will find it depressing and annoying. And all it just did my head in.
Yeah.
I mean, it really blew my mind.
I have
not stopped thinking about it since yesterday. I genuinely haven't.
Really?
I did the comedy store last night. I did the Cutting Edge, right? It's our regular Tuesday topical show. And let me tell you, my air of insouciance, right? I couldn't give a monkey's whether you think I'm funny or not.
Yeah.
Because I just watched a program about a nuclear disaster and the continued fallout where people are dying of all sorts of disgusting cancers brought on by this intransigence and lies and deceit.
Yeah.
That. So I did the gig last night.
Yeah.
I had a great time because what are you going to say to me? You want jokes about the Spice Girls? I'll give you jokes about the Spice Girls because I mean I haven't seen them. But anyway, I have to say it blew me away. It really blew me away.
I
would tell you that last night at the gig as well, I did get the Spice Girls as a subject, right?
Yeah.
People shout out subjects from the news and you have to just do stuff on it. And somebody said the Spice Girls tour. Everyone laughed because obviously I'm not the demographic, right?
No.
I'm
be
just
surprised.
Not.
You'd be surprised.
I would be surprised. I can't imagine there was that many angry Jewish middle-aged men there. I just can't. But anyway, I'm not the demographic. But I did say at one point, they said the sound was terrible. And then I said, that's because you could hear them, which I thought was pretty funny, to be honest. And yeah, so that was, I was in that sort of mood. But yeah, I can only recommend, Chernobyl. What's, I was just looking at, and I've got a couple of questions from Andy. What's more grim, the Chernobyl series or Arsenal in Baku? I think the bigger fallout will be from Chernobyl, although it's not as close, if I'm totally honest with you, all right? We can talk about the sport for a bit. Jo Konta got into the semi-final of the French Open. She'll play Marketa Vondrousova from, she's from Chiggly Bubbly. And she's from Chiggly Bubbly.
What's Chiggly Bubbly?
Chiggly Bubbly is the Czech Republic, Czech as Republic, you well know.
It. Yeah, I do. I
as
couldn't remember. Know. I couldn't
but
remember.
It's Chiggly Bubbly. And if you don't know the story, I do tell this about once every 3 months. I was at a gig once and I said to this woman, where are you from? And she went, Chiggly Bubbly. And that's what it sounded like to me. And I went, Chiggly Bubbly. And she went, Chiggly Bubbly. And Czech Republic has forever now in my mind been Chiggly Bubbly. And I try and make sure that everyone else says that as well. So anyway, Vondrousova is from there. She's unseeded.
Player.
Yeah, you know what? You'd expect somebody in the semi-final of the of the Australian, of the French Open to be a decent player.
But at 19, I mean, it's an incredible thing.
And Jo Konta's been to a semi-final before, hasn't she? Whereas, you know, she is, you know, she's an experienced player. And the thing about Vondrousova, I mean, we spoke to Ross Sattar yesterday from Roland Garros. And I said, I thought Konta could go all the way. Mm. And Ross was, maybe. But the thing about Konta is when she's on it, she's really on it.
Yeah.
I mean, they were talking before the Sloane Stephens game yesterday. And they said, now, the thing about this game is Konta is going to be hitting amazing shots with wild shots. Mm. Sloane Stephens is going to be more consistent because that's how she is. Yeah. As it turns out, Konta was so good that Sloane Stephens just didn't have a chance and looked beaten.
Yeah, she looked beaten from very early on, by the way.
You were complaining about the commentary.
I didn't like the commentary. It was like they were stunned. You know, they were like fans. I think they'd forgotten that their job was to subjectively commentate on what was going on.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, we can't believe it. Oh, wow. And it was almost like that. You know, I actually thought they were going to go, Konta. It was like that. It was just, no, she is playing the best tennis, consistent tennis, hitting great shots. Even good, Roz always said, at the net, drop shots, she's got kind of hands of stone.
She
didn't on that day.
She played well. She had 25 winners, 6 aces on her way to taking 87% of first serve points. You know what? She could win it. What I would say is that I watched Simona Halep yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And she, my God, it was...
She's at another level.
You wouldn't want to be at the end of her, on the end of what she'd what she was doing. She is the reigning champion. Yeah. She's got to be favourite. She's got to be favourite. But if Konta plays her in the final and plays like she did yesterday, she can give her a game.
Well, the difference between the both of them, and the thing about Konta is I think she rose to about 4th in the world at one stage. I think she's got into the top 10 anyway and then couldn't handle it. And there was one great year, then a huge slump. She's a lot more mature now, a lot more realistic about her performances. But she's hit a consistent spell. You know, like a team plays in one of the tournaments. And for that 6-week spell, I don't know what happens, but they click. The planets align and they perform consistently. And that's what's happened to her. She's performed consistently throughout. There is no reason for me why she can't get to the final. But Halep is on another level.
Well, I mean, she basically produced a display yesterday. Chris Evert, American superstar in the past, said she would have beaten anybody in the women's game and had left her speechless. I'm not sure she'd have beaten Halep, actually. I thought Halep looked equally immense and impressive against her opponent, but I was... Konta looked good. And she can win this. There's no doubt about
it. There's absolutely no disputing that she can win this, but she can't look past Vondrousova because...
No.
I watched her play her match, and I've got to say, she hits the ball well. She's athletic. She's strong. Good strokes. Gonna challenge Konta. But there's no reason why Konta can't beat her. She beat her the last time. I think she's beat her a couple of times. So you know, she'll be going into it confident, knowing that she's got the beating of this young girl.
My goodness me, Britain could have a female tennis Grand Slam winner. We haven't had one of them for quite some time.
And what great timing. Just before Wimbledon, it would be magnificent, wouldn't it?
It would be very, very good. Now, the other story this morning, we're talking about Maurizio Sarri saying he wants to go home. For us Italians, the lure of going home is strong. You feel that something is missing. I love this line. I began to feel the weight of distant friends. I mean, that's poetry to me. I mean, it really is the weight of distant friends.
I love the
friends.
Way that sometimes Italians, you know, the way they use their words. I think that's just such a lovely way of putting it.
I genuinely like that. You know, if I was writing poetry, I began to feel the weight of distant friends. It'd be something, it's a line I quite like to put in. And he was talking about his elderly parents. Mm. Yeah, because that was the thing. They talked about his dad and they interviewed his dad. It was a bit old, actually.
Yeah.
He's just this old Italian guy mm-hmm. who sits about with his mates and has a little drink and plays games and whatever, plays cards. And they're suddenly interviewing him about his son. He think, leave him alone, the bloke. He's 80-something. He doesn't know what's going on.
But it's the way they ramp it up, isn't it? I mean, you know, the thing about it is, if you are simple folk, by that I mean you just live for your family and things like that, which is what this appears to be. It's about your family and your friends and that lifestyle that you've lived for years. You step out of that comfort zone. Some people see it as a challenge and can get on with it. Some, irrespective of trappings of money, and you know, this is not about money. This is not about him going to Juventus and angling for more money.
Wants to go home.
This is about someone who just wants to go home, and I totally get that.
Yeah,
totally get
I mean, look, hey, he gave this interview to Vanity Fair, which is slightly bizarre. I mean, I don't really...
Yeah, it's a weird one. It's the Italian version of Vanity Fair, I think Italian. But yeah, it's a bit weird.
You know what? There are serious stories in Vanity Fair. Christopher Hitchens used to write for Vanity Fair all the time, and he's a serious writer. Mm. So it's not like you didn't get serious stuff in there. And they reckon they'll get £5 million. It's interesting that managers are going for fees now.
Yeah, it's incredible.
You know, we were talking about Pochettino earlier this year. If he went to Man United, it would cost £35 million.
It's the
he's not going to go now.
It's the nature of the business now.
But he's basically said, Sarri said, loyalty is given 100% when you are there. What does it mean to be faithful? And if one day that company sends you away, what are you doing staying true to a wife you are divorced from?
I love the use of words I've always done.
It sounds like he'd had a couple when he's talking about this. It genuinely feels like he's had a few. Can we drink? Yes, we can drink. You want a glass? And then he's chatting away and he's boozing. And he's talking about his elderly parents. Listen, you know what? I totally get that he wants to go home. Mm. And so it looks like he's going home. I don't think there'll be that many Chelsea fans who'll mourn him leaving.
Well, the problem that you have is when you leave another country to he comes over here. Here he has to be home. Listen, when I return home to Tuscany, I feel like a stranger. Tuscany can't be your home. You're not there. You are working. I've slept 30 nights in the last few years.
Slept there 30 nights or
that's what
not
I'm guessing.
Slept?
Well, one or the other.
Right.
But when you move abroad, that has to be your home. You have to make that your home. It's the only way you can survive. If you don't, then you are always going to be, you know, thinking about where your natural home, unless you can take that environment. Because it is just that sense, it's the environment. You need to take that with you wherever you go. If you can't, then it's very difficult.
Well, I've never lived out of London. I mean, I've been away for months at a time. I've been in India and I've been in the Far East and whatever, but I've never lived away from here. So I
lived in Bristol for 2 years, but that was without my family. Now, it's whether his family is settled, because it's not just about him. If his family isn't settled, then it impacts him. I was talking to Paris out there about Di Maria. When he got burgled, you could pinpoint the moment his football fell off the cliff.
Yeah.
Because his family said, his wife went. Didn't feel right, went. He fell apart. I know. I 2 years I spent at Bristol City. I couldn't function.
And by the way, Bristol City is in the same country.
That's what I'm saying. It's in the same country. But I was away from my family. And it takes special people to be able to be away from their family, away from their environment, and still function and do their job. I couldn't, and plus I was injured, which didn't help. But
especially under the pressure that Sarri's been under.
Yeah, it's under pressure. Because normally your home is your safe haven. That's where you go, block everything away with people that, irrespective of what you've done, love you anyway. Love you anyway. And if you haven't got them there, it's a lonely existence. No wonder you're homesick. It's a lonely existence.
I feel a bit emotional now.
Yeah, but
after that. Love sports. Donald Trump will join the Queen in Portsmouth to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the D-Day landings on the final day of his UK state visit. President Donald Trump will join the Queen in Portsmouth. As I've said, Theresa May will host 15 world leaders to honour the largest combined land, air and naval operation in history. Joining us now is the Conservative MP for Wellingborough, Mr. Peter Bone. Good morning, Mr. Bone.
Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for joining us. There's been a mixed reaction to the President's visit, I think it's fair to say. I guess from your point of view, you would see it as a good thing that he comes over, just try and strengthen that special relationship?
Yeah, I think it's great when any world leader comes to our country, meets the Queen, meets senior politicians. It can only help our relations with whichever leader comes over, and he's the leader of our greatest ally, and we have a special relationship with, and it's good that he's here and talking to our leaders.
I mean, if this is a world leader, by the way, who sat on the plane before he got off and sent some quite nasty Twitter messages to the mayor of London. Do you think that sort of behaviour is becoming of a world leader?
Well, my personal view is, I said this before, that Donald Trump will be better not tweeting. But that as it is, it's not the personal, the individual. It's who he is. What are you? He is President of the United States, and we should welcome him, and we should talk to him, and we should work together on things that are in our interest. Just as we should, you know, if we have the someone from China or somewhere else where we might not like what they do in their country, but that's not the point. They are the head of their country. We need to discuss with them. And make sure that we move things forward for both countries.
I mean, some of the things he was saying, I mean, he was talking about the NHS being on the table as part of a trade deal. I mean, that scares a lot of people in this country.
Well, I don't know why that would scare people, because a trade deal, obviously, when you go into when you go into negotiations for a trade deal, everything's on the table, and you say, well, actually, you can't do anything with the NHS, and they may have things in their country that they don't want us involved in, and that's part of the agreement. But let's face it, there's lots of private contractors in the NHS providing valuable services at the moment. I mean, I have a local private hospital near me who's providing lots of operations for the NHS. Nothing wrong with that. My constituents are very happy that they're getting seen and get good service. So yeah, I really think that's a bit of a red herring, that one.
But hang on a minute. I mean, people look at what goes on in healthcare in America, and they see that something like 30% of the population have no health cover whatsoever, and they don't want it to go the same way here.
Yeah,
and I think they're scared of that.
Not going to happen. That's absurd. We're going to have the NHS as we have it at the moment. Everyone knows that.
Well, it would be nice if that was the case, but if the American president is saying it's part of a trade deal, or he'd like it
He didn't say that at all, and that's not what he said. And anyone who's trying to interpret it that way is doing it for political purposes.
Right. So I guess you wouldn't agree with Jeremy Corbyn going on a demonstration against him?
Well, I think the problem that Jeremy Corbyn has is that he said in the past he would talk to anyone who he has profound disagreements with, and yet he didn't go to the state banquet in honour of the President of the United States. That's a very strange way to behave, and then went to protest against him. I mean, he could be Prime Minister, who knows, in a few weeks' time, and that's not really setting a good relationship with someone you might have to deal with fairly shortly. I think it was a huge mistake by Jeremy Corbyn, and I think many people in the Labour Party think it is as well.
Yeah, but there are plenty of people who would agree with him. I mean, I guess the question is, if you think someone is a clear and present danger, you know, if you've got someone who is essentially a climate change denier as American president, are you not beholden to demonstrate against someone like that?
Goodness gracious me, no. It goes back to my point. The human rights abuses in China are extraordinary. But we would still have the Chinese president over here to talk to. and we wouldn't organise. You wouldn't expect leaders of a main political party to go and demonstrate against that person. I mean, it's just not. It's not in our country's interest to do that. Jeremy Corbyn was doing that purely for partly political reasons, because, as you say, many people who support him hugely dislike the President of the United States. That was a wrong decision by his on his part, but he did it for partly political reasons.
We're having a debate on this show in maybe 15 minutes or so about how toxic things have become between left and right. Do you think that maybe we need to pull back a little bit? We've seen the demonstrators outside, people screaming at each other. Do we need a bit more civility in politics?
I don't know about you, but I saw a video where some lady was screaming at a gentleman in his face. And I thought, gosh, that's not the way debate and protest in this country normally occurs. And things are definitely getting nastier. We have unfortunate attacks on physical attacks on people as well, as well as verbal attacks. It's definitely not. Not good, and it seems to me at the moment certain people are encouraging those sort of things, people to demonstrate and do that sort of thing. It's not what I think. I believe in democracy. I disagree with people from the left, but I just disagree with them. I don't think they're not Democrats. I don't call them, you know, communists or fascists or things like that.
That's
not how it's done.
I've heard so many. I mean, and I've heard so many people being called traitors and words like betrayal and being used. And by the way, I've also seen political debates in the House of Commons where people are shouting and screaming at each other as well. It doesn't set the best example, does it?
Well, it's always been very, very robust debate in the House of Commons. You can go back in the history of the Commons and see some extraordinary things said about people. But basically, people in the House of Commons, virtually everyone there, respects the opinion of the other person. They may not fundamentally disagree with it, but they don't. They realise they're Democrats. They got elected just as, you know, I've got elected. And they have the right to be heard. But what we're seeing outside of Parliament is, you know, abuse, attacks, what you see on Twitter is unbelievable.
Yeah. A brief question about the Tory leadership. I know we spoke last week about this. We've lost a couple. Kit Malthouse, I believe, has pulled out, and James Cleverly as well. Do you think the Tory party should change the rules to make it more difficult? Because in the end, it looks to me like there's so many candidates because the Tory party doesn't quite know what they are at the moment.
Well, I think the rules did allow candidates to enter the race who had very little support. And it did seem a little silly that we should have people who could only find one or two MPs to support them in the race. So I think the suggestion that you need to have 8 people to support your nomination seems to me perfectly sensible. And we're getting on with the process. I think the first round of voting is next week, and week after that, we'll have it down to 2 candidates who'll go to the party members to decide. So I think, you know, having a field of, you know, 12, 13, 14, or whatever it is, seems to me to be too large. And I think the rule changes has helped, and that's why one or two already pulled out.
And one more question before I let you go, and I know we've spoke about this last week, but I wanted to press you on this, that it seems to me, and I mean, I know you're talking about a no-deal Brexit and you're supporting Boris Johnson, who's also talking about a no-deal Brexit. A no-deal Brexit seems like the least conservative thing I've ever heard of. I mean, it seems, you know, I've heard manufacturers saying it's economic lunacy to go for a no-deal Brexit. You're the party of business. You're also the party of the union, which may break up if there's a no-deal Brexit. It doesn't seem very conservative.
Well, I can point to plenty of businesses who think a no-deal, a so-called no-deal solution, is no problem. And what all businesses want, and this is universal, they want certainty. They want to know what's happening. This limbo of not knowing what's happening is what business really hate. Businesses will tell you that, tell us what's going to happen and we'll get on and deal with it. But this business of not knowing what's going to happen is the real problem. And that's why I think all the Tory leadership candidates are saying they want to do a deal, but the majority of them are saying if we can't do it by the 31st of October, then we'll come out with a no a no deal basis, because business wants certainty.
Well, 2.5 years of trying to sort it out doesn't exactly create certainty, does it? But
you're right. That's the problem. That was exactly the problem. And that's maybe one of the reasons that the Verdi Party did so hugely badly in the European elections. I think that's right. The fact we didn't sort it out, we should have done.
Thank you, Mr. Bone. Nice to speak to you. That's Peter Bone there, who is the Conservative MP for Wellingborough.
This is Love Sport.
The Chelsea manager Maurizio Sarri says he misses Italy amid reports he could leave the club to join Juventus. Sarri's future has been the subject of debate all season, despite only moving to Stamford Bridge from Napoli last summer. Sarri told Vanity Fair, "For us Italians, the call of home is strong." It's just the idea of it feels like a little bit like the Vikings. Maurizio, and he's like there going, "I can hear." Maurizio! Anyway, he wants to go home, and that's fair enough. He's homesick. By the way, Federer is playing Nadal in the semi-final of the French Open tomorrow. These guys, I mean, it's getting ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
I was thinking, I remember when my kids were young. I mean, little kids. Mm. And Federer was playing Nadal in big games Wimbledon and various places around. And they're still doing it.
This shouldn't really be happening on two fronts. In all that time, there's been no other players to come and challenge them. I mean, Andy, the top four.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, Wawrinka's been on the edge. Andy Murray's been on the edge as well.
I mean, I've stuck him in the four, but you know, Murray, and so it's 4.5 if you add Wawrinka.
Listen, there's been a couple who've won Grand Slams. Cilic has won a Grand Slam.
Yeah, but
Del Potro's won a Grand Slam. Probably could have won
I think
more,
Delpo could have, but for injuries.
But for injuries. But in the end, right, and you've got, and let's be fair, Andy Murray has won 3 Grand Slams, will go down as a tennis great. There is no doubt about it. The greatest British male tennis player that we've ever had. And there's no doubt that he probably would have won more, but for these two.
Yeah, definitely.
But the three of them, we should talk about the three of them, Federer, Nadal and Djokovic. I mean, there hasn't been another people in another sport who have dominated for that length of time, consistently getting to Grand Slam quarters and Grand Slam semi-finals.
For me, it's the level of their performance that hasn't dropped off. That's what scares me. That's what would scare all the other players. You know, they're just hoping. They're just waiting. Because once them three go, then it becomes competitive again, if that makes sense. Their level
of
performance.
They show no signs of going.
They don't, and that's the worrying thing. They show no signs.
Federer's 37.
It's ridiculous. He's got to go at some point, but you just don't know when. Because I watched a game yesterday, and I think it was 15 times he had the opportunity to break Wawrinka. But it's not whether he did or not. It's that his brilliance has put him, you know, in those situations so often. Ridiculous.
He's got the second greatest clay court record at Roland Garros. Unfortunately, the first person Rafa Nadal. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the only one he won was when he beat, when Robin Söderling knocked Nadal out. But he's still an absolutely unbelievably good clay court player. Obviously, part of the reason he's got the most wins is because he's been around the most. But in the end, if you keep winning at Roland Garros, sooner or later you're going to run into Rafa Nadal, and that might be the end of you. Now, Nadal has dropped a set at this championship. He has, so it's a possibility. But I still see a Nadal Djokovic final. And by the way, I think Djokovic is going to win it. We're going to be chatting to Ross Sattar later in the program, so we'll definitely talk about those two. But I'm just in awe of them. That's all. I'm just thinking about the fact that my kids were tiny when they were doing this, and they're still doing it.
It's ridiculous,
you know. And by the way, a very interesting point on a different subject. We've been talking about the Champions League final this week. Jurgen Klopp arranged for Liverpool to play Benfica B. This is in a friendly before the final because Benfica B play a similar style to Spurs, and the Benfica B's manager was asked to play exactly the same way as Tottenham. I mean, it, makes sense.
Of course it does. That's what I mean.
That's prep.
You know, Spurs would have done the same thing. You do it every week in, week out on a Thursday is when clubs work on the opposition. And what they'll do normally is they'll get their reserves or their whoever it is to mimic the opposition. That's what they'll do anyway. Just so they have an idea of where they play and what they do. And what you do, you play through it. You know, this is what they do well. We'll have a go at it. Right, we'll play through again. And what we're looking at is how we counteract it, how we can nullify it, how we can turn that into a positive for us. So that's just part of the preparation work.
And the Benfica B team adjusted players to mimic Ali and Eriksen's movements in this 4-2-3-1.
It's a difficult thing to do, but again, it's all ish. This is what they'll do ish, because you can't, you know, replicate the real thing.
Did Benfica have a striker up front who did absolutely nothing all game just to properly mimic what Spurs were going to do in the Champions League final? And I'm not having a go at him. I'm just saying he shouldn't have played. And by the way, the two Tottenham fans who I see regularly in the front and veg place I go to, totally agree with me.
Yeah,
totally agree. And we've been having the ongoing discussion about whether Spurs should cash in on Harry Kane now, get two players for 60 million quid each in midfield, or one striker and one midfielder, and change the way they play, because I think they look better without him. I mean, I genuinely do.
They're
absolutely not going to do what I'm saying.
No, they're not going to do it. But again, you know, him being out has shown them, because often it happens, him being out, you either struggle, or by some way, shape or form, you find a way to survive. And they've done better than that. They haven't survived. They've actually prospered without him.
But they got to the Champions League final.
Exactly right. So he, I've said it before at the start of the week, this is a crossroads period for Spurs.
Yeah.
Because if they're going to back Harry Kane, then, you know, I'm not sure that they're going to be able to strengthen the squad in terms of attackers. No centre-forward is going to go to a club if they know that they're not going to play him. And while they seem to back Harry Kane, Lucas Moura, who's done just as well, who deserves to play, you know, I'd be gutted if I was him the other
way. Well, if you're a striker and you're looking at a situation at Spurs going into the Champions League final and you're going, right, they have picked a bloke who hasn't played for 6 weeks over a guy who scored a hat-trick in the semi-final to get them through, I ain't getting in that team. I'm not going there. Yeah, very interesting.
This is Love Sport.
Joining us now is the Liberal Democrat MP for Westmorland and Lonsdale, Tim Farron. Good morning, Mr. Farron.
Good morning.
Morning. Well, I mean, it's a very strong reaction to Donald Trump's visit. Your leader was not very impressed. Should he have gone to the state banquet? Should Jeremy Corbyn have gone to the state banquet?
I think it's a perfectly legitimate thing for a British politician to decide that they're not going to join the President of the United States at a banquet. I think it's probably wrong for the Queen to have been put in a position where she had to formally entertain him. It's worth bearing in mind that normally a US president is well into their second term before they get such an honour. And we can make a couple of mistakes here. One is to be childish and rude and vulgar towards the President of the United States and indeed the people of the United States. But the other is to get what I call outrage fatigue. Well, we kind of get used to the kind of things that Donald Trump has said without really feeling how important and how awful they are. The banning of Muslims coming into the United States, his personal actions towards women, and many of the other things that he's done, which are clearly racist and clearly are un-American and against the values that the United Kingdom and the United States share. So it's good to and right to, I think, boycott the palace. At the same time, it's also right to engage with the leader of a major ally.
Quite. I mean, there are certain very, very worrying aspects of things he said. He talked about a trade deal where the NHS might be on the table. I mean, this is going to set off massive alarm bells, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I think one of the problems is this, that leaving the European Union means that we stop being a big player, or we become a middle-sized player. And that means when we're up against other countries in a trade negotiation, they will hold the upper hand. When the EU sits down with the United States and organises a trade deal, the United States and the EU are at least equal partners. The EU is actually slightly bigger in terms of being a market. When the UK sits down with the US to try and negotiate a trade deal, and we desperately will need one if we leave the EU, we'll find ourselves in a situation where the United States calls the shots. And if that means that they want access to the NHS, that means we've either got to do without a deal, which all the Brexiteers promised we would have easily, or we end up with a deal which is massively disadvantageous, not just to us in terms of the NHS, but British farmers being undercut and all the rest of it. And this is the reality of life in the world if you've not got the protection of being part of the world's biggest market, which is the EU.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the Lib Dem position is that we should remain in the EU, but that's not what was voted for.
True enough. Having said that, I think that David Davis, we'll quote him, shall we? Arch-Brexiteer, he said, a democracy that cannot change its mind is not a democracy anymore. And the simple reality is that Donald Trump's visit is another additional piece of evidence to remind us that, on reflection, maybe we ought to think again, not least because things like the fact that the NHS was at risk, rather than being likely to benefit £350 million a week, at risk from being dismantled by a United States trade agreement. Those things were not on the table when the referendum took place 3 years ago. And it's wrong the British people should have Brexit imposed upon them now that those facts are out there.
And in terms of the Lib Dems, I mean, this is a bit of a resurgence. They've basically taken this position that that we should remain in Europe, and it's tapped into quite wide support. I mean, how far can this go? Because if Labour seem to be stuck between two completely opposing constituencies, the Conservative Party, well, who knows what they're going to do. And so the Lib Dems have a serious opportunity here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a decision we took when I was leader for us to be respectful of the result, respectful of the democratic process that has happened over the referendum, but to be unmoved, really, in our position on Brexit, be the pro-European party for the United Kingdom, is a decision that's paid off. It tells you that in politics, one of the things that matters the most is clarity. Take a position, be principled about it, respect the other side, but stick to it. And that is what we've done, and we won in London for the first time in over 100 years, and we came second in a national election for the first time in over 100 years. And we find ourselves in a situation now where I think we have recovered, or we are recovering to the position we perhaps were in before the coalition. But you've got to ask yourself this, if that's all we're satisfied with, if we're satisfied with just being the third party again and being in reasonable health, that's a bit unambitious. You look at the state of the Labour and the Conservative parties now, Britain desperately needs not just an alternative for someone to vote for, but an alternative government, and that's what the Liberal Democrats should really seek to do now.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about some of the toxicity of the debate. I mean, we've seen pictures of people screaming at a Trump yeah. supporter and the backwards and forwards. It's all got a bit too much. After this is all settled, and assuming, I mean, well, I say after this is all settled in about 100 years' time, do you not think we should take a step back and have a look at the way we conduct our politics and go, yeah, now maybe we went a bit too far, a bit too polarised?
I think you're right. I mean, first of all, I think we can't wait for this, whatever this may be, to be settled. I think we've found ourselves in a place where debate in our country, probably not just in our country, has become really toxic, deeply hateful. And, you know, the
MPs have died. MPs have died because of it.
Absolutely. And Joe Cox's murder is one extreme and tragic example. But I think that you saw some of the clips yesterday of anti-Trump protesters screaming in rage, violent rage, at those who took a different position. And maybe they're unrepresentative, those clips. I hope that they are. But in any event, it perhaps does shine a light on the fact that we seem to have lost the ability, if ever we had it, of disagreeing well. And, you know, you may disagree with someone's argument, but you must respect the person with whom you disagree. And I think that is the danger of this polarised politics we find ourselves in now. People use violent language, people demonise and dehumanise the other, and that is no way to rebuild a country. And so it happens on both sides and from all directions, but it's something which... So how do we deal with it? Well, basically it starts at home, doesn't it? You've got to think of yourself. What are your reactions to people who take the opposite position to you? You know, that's a question I would ask myself. You know, who are you following on Twitter, and are you taking time to listen to the other side of the argument? And you don't need to change your mind to change your perspective, so you treat somebody else with a different point of view as a human being, rather than always coming up with, you know, demonising language about them.
And social media probably doesn't help in this regard, does it?
I don't think it does. I think it social media kind of creates or facilitates groupthink, and it's also a little bit like road rage in that, you know, you're kind of protected, aren't you, from actually really engaging with another person, and you're sort of able to be your worst self, knowing that they can't see you, so to speak. And
no.
I think social media has many benefits. My feeling at the moment is it's got more negatives associated to it. It allows us to be our worst selves.
It's great for football in the Eurovision Song Contest. That's about it, in my opinion. listen, thank
absolutely.
You.
Almost as good as CFA.
Blimey, now, for anyone under 40, I'll have to explain what that is. Love sports. Now, we are talking this morning about the level of debate, basically, in Britain, the way that people shout and scream at each other. We've got a clip from yesterday, and this is out. This is in Parliament Square, outside the House of Parliament. Donald Trump is on a state visit, and people were demonstrating, and this happened. Alright, now basically, if you haven't seen the pictures of that and what happened there, there was a lot of people demonstrating against Donald Trump. One man decided to go out there with a Make America Great Again hat on, demonstrate, essentially saying that, you know, he's the American president. And then there were these people screaming at him, Nazi scum, Nazi scum. And then, like I say, the woman at the end, she just, as one final flourish, just went, Nazi, right, is what she did at this man. And then someone threw milkshake over him, which is or some sort of dairy-based product. And and then everyone cheered. Oh, not everyone. She apparently is a bit ashamed, apparently, according to one of the newspaper's reports I read.
But that's the real her.
Wow.
That's the real her. That's the real her.
All right, then. This is what we're talking about. Have we opened up this Pandora's box with what's happened with Brexit and all the rest of it for the last 3 years? We've brought out the real character of people, or have people been polarised by the arguments?
It's a little bit of both, but what I got from her was an entitlement. I'm entitled to say this. I'm entitled to scream in your face in the way it happened. You're entitled to have that stuff thrown over you. A couple of things. I don't know what this guy expected when he went into a sea of anti-Trump people.
Well, he wanted to say, look, you know what? This is the American
not
president.
Not the time to do it. Not in because you see, the thing about it is, what was going to happen? You know, these people were, you know, the protesters are screaming at the top of their lungs. Along comes someone who totally disagrees with them. One person, by the way. He was always going to get it. It was always going to be that way because we have this environment now where it's almost like bullying. It is almost like that.
That
was horrible. That was horrible to watch. And I've got to say, no doubt, those pictures will be seen all over the place. No doubt that woman is ashamed because
she didn't look good.
I mean, again, you know, what I would say to her is, you know, I wonder what your kids see when they see that. You know, you losing control like that and being really overly aggressive because you can also make your point without being that way.
Also, by the way, I would like to point out that the guy was there with the Make America Great Again hat on, right? But calling him a Nazi, and my people, by the way, have suffered at the hands of actual Nazis, I don't know. It sort of loses the power somewhat because the guy is just there to say, look, it's the American president and I support what he's doing.
And I have a right to do that as well.
He absolutely does have a right to do that. Now, excuse me, our Love Sport reporter, Patrick Christie's, was down there yesterday. Let's hear some of the conversations he had.
That's the thing. It's states. And that, you know, that's the thing.
Oh, hang on. It's kicking off. Hello. Yeah. What's your name, sir?
My name is James.
And what's the problem, James?
I don't know why you give these sort of like these racist, bigoted opinions. Why do you feel the need to be on the platform?
He hasn't said anything racist or bigoted. Someone's trying to steal his hat. Why are you trying to steal his hat?
Why can't I?
Well, I think it's theft.
Is it?
Yeah, if you steal his hat, yeah.
Why are you wearing it here?
Intimidation.
Intimidation is also a crime.
Are you intimidated by his hat?
The hat is only used for intimidation.
Why are you trying to take my phone?
I just want to see what your name is.
My name is Patrick Christie's. What's your name?
You don't get my name.
Okay, why not?
I don't want to give it to you.
Okay, so why are you here today?
Because I don't like Trump, because he's...
So you don't think people should be allowed to voice their support for Trump?
No.
Well, why not?
I don't think people should be able to voice for fascists.
Okay, all right, fair enough. It's a valid point, but I think we are a free country. I'm going to head back over here now because it's kicking off again. Excellent. So have you had quite a lot of this today?
This is the first time it's gotten really this bad. Yeah.
Aren't we a free country? Aren't we allowed to... Well, I've interviewed quite a lot of other people as well, so, you know, it can't just be a one-note samba, can it? Oh, the hat's gone, and there's a bit of a fight. There's a bit of a fight. And the guy with the Trump hat pushed the woman who nicked his Trump hat, and now a police officer has stepped in. There is quite a bit of aggro going on.
You're the idiot giving him a platform when he's here to just cause trouble. This isn't a pro-Trump protest, and we're here to protest against it. And you're giving this guy, this moron, you're giving him a platform, and it's obviously going to cause nothing but conflict here. So you're antagonizing the situation by giving this guy a platform at an anti-Trump protest. Do not see that.
All right, there's obviously people are very, very angry. And I get that they're very, very angry. And by the way, those people were there for, I think, basically good reasons.
Yeah, of
course. Donald Trump could be seen as a serious danger to the world order, yeah. Right? He is fascist. Well, that's quite a strong word to use, but he's a climate change denier. Mm. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, he goes against most scientific thought. He is he's certainly creating quite a lot of turmoil. He might be causing a trade war with the Chinese. He's possibly breaking up the anti-nuclear thing with Iran. There's North Korea. There's a number of issues on which he's a danger, it seems, to the world. And those people are expressing their views very angrily and loudly. But the way that that young woman was speaking,
that's
to
what scared me.
Patrick.
I think I said entitlement.
I didn't like the sound of
it. I am allowed to do this, but I don't have to give you my name. Now, hold on. If you're going to step up and do that...
Well, she doesn't have to give you.
No, she doesn't. But it's the way she's gone about. I can be as rude and aggressive and I can do what I want, but anonymously, to a certain degree.
So, yeah, I there's no doubt the level of political debate has dropped somewhat to people screaming and shouting
at each
other. Well,
it's the baying crowds, isn't it? I mean, it literally is.
It was a demonstration. I mean, that's the point. The whole idea of a demo is that people are demonstrating against.
What I mean is, you know, okay, you can demonstrate as much as you want, but you can't impose your will on me. If I think slightly differently about the same thing, then
you don't think me shouting Nazi at you louder and louder will make you change
that's
your
what
mind.
I mean. I mean, what's the like we say, the actual art of conversation and debating, that's gone. And what it's been replaced by is, I'm just going to shout louder and throw stuff at you and intimidate you more. That's what I'm going to do.
Where does that end?
Well, it ends in violence.
It ends in violence. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, now what becomes the issue is not what the issue should be. It's about these people. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about these people who are effing and blinding and shouting, rather than the actual issue, which is what you spoke about, what Trump is, because that's
serious,
what it's about.
The serious nature of some of the things he's done, the taking away kids from their parents and putting them in cages.
It's incredible what
he's
done.
There's all that stuff, the anti-Muslim rhetoric. There's plenty of things. And you know what? If the people were out there to complain about that, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
They should be allowed to complain about that. You know, and there are definite questions as to whether we should give a state visit to a person like this. On the other hand, America accounts for about 15% of the trade that we do. And I think it's important that we maintain those trading relationships.
Have to do it.
So really, both viewpoints are valid. On the one hand, you can have the viewpoint that Peter Bone put 20 minutes ago, that it's important that we maintain decent trading relationships.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Queen and Prince Philip and the whole royal family and all that pomp is wheeled out to keep them happy, because that provides jobs and employment for people.
I
like the fact
that
Camilla then turned around and winked at the cameras.
Yeah,
right? I mean,
brilliant.
Good on her.
Brilliant.
Good on her, because it's like, we are in on the joke. We know what an oaf this person
is. Exactly right.
But also, people should be allowed to scream and shout outside of Parliament as well. And the guy turning up in a Make America Great hat is a provocative
act. It's incendiary. It's always, like I said, what do you think is going to happen? That shouldn't be allowed to happen. Now,
I mean, the guy didn't get beaten up.
No.
He had a milkshake thrown at him.
I'll tell you what, there's a hop, skip and a jump before him getting that.
Yeah, but he didn't.
No, I understand that.
And there are plenty of countries where he would have done.
Well, to be truthful, if someone throws that drink over me, the first thing that you're doing is you're looking around who it is to see if you can give him a left hook, because that's unacceptable. So the way he held his nerve was great. Now, where I'm at is those anti-Trump protesters, as long as they're kept segregated from the pro-Trump, because if you put them two together, it's gonna end up that way. And like I said before, all that's ignored
keep them
then,
apart.
Yeah, all that's ignored then is the actual issue, because that's what we should be discussing. Is actually, like you've just said, those things you wheeled out about Trump are horrific. That's what we should be talking about. We're talking about people's behaviour rather than actually.
Yeah, well, that's the unfortunate thing. There was also a 20-foot-high Donald Trump on a toilet.
That's funny.
That's funny, is it?
Well,
that's funny.
It's
the president of the United States of America, our major trading partner, and there we have the elected leader of the United States of America, an effigy 20-foot high of him sitting on the toilet.
Hold on.
I'm just saying.
Let's put it into context. Listen, if you read the stuff he's
Nazi scum.
Read the stuff he's tweeted. Listen to the things he said.
Yeah.
I mean, as the president. You know, as a president, he shouldn't be saying some of the things. How he's got away with... And you know where we are at the moment? Where we are at the moment is, it's almost like, well, it's Donald Trump, he can do it. It's almost, it's literally, we are allowing him to get away with stuff because it's Donald Trump.
Yeah, I agree. But then,
ridiculous.
You know what? The mayor of London, a person that I voted for, called him a 21st century fascist.
Yeah.
Tweeted that out.
Yeah.
Is that the behaviour
of
an elected official as well?
It's not. But that's where we are. That's the road we're going down now. Our elected officials are starting to behave like the baying crowd when they should be above that, because being elected officials, you expect to be able to behave in a certain level, a certain standard of behaviour.
Comedians, mate. Ukraine have got one. Italy are getting one. We need one over here.
Are you?
No. I'm saying Kathy
Stone
Burke.
For PM.
Kathy Burke, I'm telling you.
What about you? You're well versed. I've learned a lot listening to you talk about politics.
I prefer to carp from the sidelines.
This is Love Sport.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.